Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Founders Club Radio.
Welcome to the Founders Club, where each week we talk to the founders and leaders of great private companies. I'm your host, John Coffin, and this morning I'm joined in the studio by Archie White, the president of AC White Relocations, and Luther Randall, the president of Randall Brothers, Inc. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, sir.
Archie, we're going to start with you. Thank you both for joining us today. But tell us about AC White and what your company does.
Well, we're a moving company. We move people's furniture. We started in 1926. My grandfather actually started the business with one truck and one office in the back of a barbershop, I was told. We currently have about 120 employees at five different locations, and we've enjoyed being a customer of yours.
Okay. Now, you said five different locations. Which cities? You're primarily here in Atlanta, and then you've expanded over time out to other areas?
Yes, Atlanta is our main location. Now, we also have an office in Columbus, Georgia, Macon, Savannah, and a little army town called Hinesville that a lot of soldiers, the government moves the soldiers around a lot, so that's a very profitable office.
Okay, and so really from the start, you've been in the moving business, and there are four generations of Whites in the business, is that correct?
Correct. My oldest son is our chief financial officer.
Okay, fantastic. Now, again, just to remind our viewers, our listeners, to become a fourth-generation company is just an incredibly difficult thing. It's rare. It's less than 1% of the companies that are started that follow on to the fourth generation. And so it's really quite remarkable to have four generations in the business. Archie, when did you know that you wanted to stay in or join the family business?
Well, I had worked in the summers, you know, in high school and in college, and it's always been kind of expected, but it's, you know, it's a business that my dad did it when he was my age, and so I kind of followed in his footsteps, and my son did the same.
Okay. And so you obviously do a lot of residential moving, relocations, but also I guess there are other aspects of your business that have evolved over the years.
That's true. Of course, the home relocations was our main business for many years, and it still is, but in the last 6 or 8 years, we've had to diversify in order to survive. You know, we've had to get into record storage, commercial moving, different things like that, truck leasing, that they all kind of piggyback on the moving, but it's, you know, to survive these days, you got to diversify and be more than just a one-trick pony.
Okay. Now, when you say record storage, what's that part of the business?
Well, it's doctors and lawyers mostly keep their records for long periods of time, and they don't have room on site to keep them. So we have a pickup and delivery service. You know, it's all internet based. They can order, if a doctor needs somebody's medical records, they can go onto the website and order them, and we deliver them out that day or the next day. It's kind of a growing thing. There's a few. In fact, we got into it by buying out a couple of smaller companies that you know, had run out of space, and we had a lot of space, so we took over their line of business and have tried to build on it.
So over the years, you've both grown geographically, and then you've also acquired businesses. And how do you go about that evaluation process when you're either moving into a new geography or prospectively buying a new business line or an existing business
line? Well, a lot of it's seat of the pants. You know, it's not real scientific, but our partners, we do a lot of business with people in other parts of the country, you know, movers and people in the same business that we're in. And sometimes they'll come to us and say, hey, we really need somebody in such and such city. Would you consider opening up there? And that's how we've done it down through the years in a couple of places. But it's, you know, like the record storage. We were looking to get into record storage, but if you just start from square one, it's a slow process. So What we did is buy out a couple of smaller competitors, which we bought their revenue and we bought their customer list. So it worked out pretty good.
And did they stay involved in the business or did they typically get out?
They both stayed for the transition period. In fact, one of them is still with us in a sales function, but it's they'd kind of outgrown their facility, and it's on a small scale, it's hard work. You know, you pick up a 40-pound box and you deliver it out to somebody, and, you know, not everybody wants to do that, so forever. So,
yeah. Understand. Well, that's great. The other thing that you, I guess, have is agent relationships with Mayflower and United. Talk about how that works in your business. I know a lot of our listeners have very critical relationships with either partners or, you know, large companies that they do business with. I'd love your perspective on the history of that and how you maximize that relationship.
Well, they're our main partner. In fact, we're a shareholder with both of those companies. United Van Lines and Mayflower are actually the same company. They're under the umbrella of Unigroup. But they have agents all over the world and mostly all over the domestic United States. So when we have a truck or a customer moving to Texas or California, if we deliver our customer, we can work with a local mover there to get a return load. It's kind of a co-op situation. Their trucks use our tonnage to get back to their base operation, and we do the same in reverse.
So it's kind of a virtuous cycle that you've created, and then you're an actual shareholder of those companies, so you have a vested equity interest in their success as well.
That's correct.
I see. That's remarkable. Is that something that is typical to your industry, or I guess because of all the back and forth and the geographic aspects of it?
It is. It's there's several different models that have been used down through the years, but for the best, I guess the best results, if the company is owned by its agents around the country, they tend to be more in tune with the industry. You know, we're not owned by a railroad or, you know, an insurance company or a bank or anything like that. It's mostly the people that operate the company on a national basis also do it on a local basis.
Okay. So, you know, I guess that really helps from a new business development standpoint. How else are you kind of getting the word out about your company?
Well, we do a lot of internet advertising. We no longer advertise in the Yellow Pages. That's, you know, kind of old style, but we do a lot of internet advertising. We work with real estate agents. You know, we have memberships with multiple chambers of commerce in most of the cities that we're in. And it's networking and internet base is the biggest majority of how we get the word out. And of course, satisfied customers. We get a lot of repeat customers that, believe it or not, sometimes will move 4 or 5 years later. After they move, the next time they need to move, they'll call back and ask for the same crew. That happens on a fairly regular basis.
Wow. And have you had long-term employees? Again, as you mentioned, you know, somebody who's moving, that's a tough thing to keep up from a physical standpoint.
It is a mover that can survive, you know, years and years of working 50, 60, 70 hours a week. You know, not everybody can do that. Mm-hmm. Just recently, we had a retirement party for a gentleman that worked for us for over 60 years.
That's remarkable. Wow. And so I guess you have a lot of other longtime employees as well.
We do. I would say we probably average 18 or 20 years with some people that have been with us, you know, 30 and 35 and 40 years. I've actually been in the business for 50 years myself.
That's, I mean, it's remarkable to have that kind of longevity. And I guess that flows over to safety issues and customer service and quality, as you mentioned.
It does. It's, you know, it's how you treat people. We've had people to leave and, you know, after a while they'll contact and say, I sure wouldn't mind coming back. You know, things, you know, we enjoyed while I worked there and I'd like to come back. And quite often we can take somebody back if you know, if their record's clean.
Right. Gotcha. Now, you mentioned internet advertising. How does that work for you? Is it, I guess you're really at a consumer level, really driven by that search engine, by that initial, you know, Atlanta Moving and et cetera.
We really are. It's based on the search engines. Now, our parent company, United and Mayflower, they also have very good websites, which a lot of times people, when they're inquiring about, you know, moving, they might do it at 10 o'clock at night, you know, while they're sitting at their computer. So we'll have emails to come in during the night, and we have a night, I guess, attendant that works the website that'll at least communicate with them to let them know that someone will be in touch. Mm-hmm. But it's mainly through the websites, search engines is what most of the inquiries come from.
Okay. So, you know, homeowner or a apartment person, you know, you probably only move, I don't know, you know, 5, 10, 15 times in your life. So it's not something that you do every day. What advice do you have for the consumer as they're kind of thinking about making that move either across the street or across the country?
Right. Well, a person, you know, when they're moving, they're basically turning over everything they own to a total stranger. So they need to research who they're dealing with, do some checking. You know, it's word of mouth, friends that have moved, or, you know, a lot of people will contact us and ask for references, which we're happy to give. But, you know, when you turn over everything you own to a stranger, you got to do a little investigation to make sure that they're not going to just drive off or change the price later after they've, you know, held your goods hostage. So
that's great. Thank you, Archie. We'll come back and talk about a couple of more issues around the, being a fourth generation company. But Luther, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about Randall Brothers, Inc., and what you've been doing over the last 125 plus years.
Well, we share a lot of similarities with Archie. Actually, the history of his company greatly mirrors ours, having been in business for quite so long, since 1885. Mm. But we have a number of employees that have been with us a long time as well, and it's great to hear somebody talk about the proper manner in which to conduct business. It's a real old-school way of thinking with new-school technology, and mm-hmm. that's worked for us as well. But our company was started in 1885 by my great-grandfather, and eventually he brought in his two brothers. But he basically started out with one wagon and a mule and a load of coal, and then he added lumber to that and would just make deliveries. And that's essentially what the company expanded from.
Right. That's so from there, I guess it's gone through, and I guess your father, you took over the business from your father in the late 80s?
Yeah, I became a CEO of the company in 1989.
Okay.
And so my father was, he was in the business, I think he became president when he was 37 years old, and the company's gone through a myriad of changes since my grandfather was at the company. But I guess with my grandfather, when he came into the company, that's really when it experienced the a greater degree of growth.
Right.
And then we tried to continue that onward.
So to your current scope of operations?
Currently, we have we're a little bit unique in the sense of a conventional building material supply company. We're very diversified. We're in commercial, residential. We deal primarily with a professional clientele and contractors, and in our dealer department or distribution area, we sell to other businesses who in their own respective areas sell to contractors. We also deal with architects and designers, and we have an architectural millwork manufacturing facility on site, which is like a custom tailor shop.
Okay. So you're doing a lot of customized work as well as holding a lot of inventory for standard products, et cetera.
And yes.
So, the level of depth of, I guess, that's one of the areas that you pride yourself in is your inventory and the way that you can address everybody's needs.
Absolutely.
Okay. tell us about your observations about the residential real estate market these days and how that's progressing. It seems to be recovering pretty well.
It's looking good now. The regulatory aspects of the banking industry has, you know, prohibited some of a little bit more robust growth, but it's going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. We see currently a good trend up until possibly 2019. Gets a little dicey from there, a little uncertain as to what's going to happen with interest rates and the like. But the current climate is very good. It's still not back to where it was in pre-recession.
Right.
But it's but we're very encouraged. And right now, our greatest challenge is just managing the growth spurt that we have. It's very great. Before, the challenge was just surviving. Now it's keeping pace with the growth that we can absorb.
What are some of the challenges that you're facing on that kind of early, that kind of recovery and the snapback from a growth standpoint?
Well, there's just a great deal of investment. The money that's coming into the residential sector is oftentimes driven by private equity, mm-hmm. whereas before there was just a great deal of construction lending. I think back pre-recession, 80% of the bank's assets or assets under management were based on real estate lending, mm-hmm. whether it was commercial or individual. But so that's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm really interested to kind of hear more about this kind of transition standpoint from your father. You know, when did you know that you wanted to get into the business? Did you immediately come out of school and get into it, or?
No, I was much too egotistical. I was all of my life I'd always heard about the self-made man was always spoken of with great reverence. So I was determined to go a different route, make my bones, so to speak. And then if I decided that the family business was the path that I wanted to take, it was the opportunity was there. You know, provided I could cut the mustard.
Right,
but. For family dynamics and a variety of other reasons, but principally just wanting to make it on my own before I came into the business. So I stayed away from the business for about 15 years out of college.
What brought you back in?
Well, it was just the opportunity to run the company. I had also satisfied my objectives in terms of where I was with my own career and what I thought I could contribute to the company. So it was important to me to come into the business with a certain degree of credibility,
mm-hmm.
And fortunately was able to accomplish that. But I'm so glad that I came into the business. It made my father extremely happy, mm-hmm. and proud. You know, the last thing that he wanted to think of was exit strategy. It just never was part of our vocabulary. So
right.
And also to work with my father, I had I'm sure Archie was the same way, but I had a wonderful working relationship with my father, and family businesses don't always experience that, but in my case it was great.
But if you think back over the long history of your company, what are some of the cultural cornerstones that come out of that, and that may have been something that you and your father created, or even further back than that? Are there things that you really hang your hat on, so to speak, or feel like are key to the success of your business?
Yeah, I believe so. It's our mission statement is kind of it's the customer, stupid. You don't take right. care of the customer, and you're not going to survive. And if you take care of the customer, you're going to do. Everything else falls into place, with obviously the number one driver to turn a profit for the business. But we really genuinely care about the people that we do business with. It's not just about, making the sale, the salesperson getting his commission, and then moving on to the next thing. And because of the previous climate, the recession that we've just gone through, a lot of talented people have exited the business. Mm. So we value added into our proposition hiring creating a circumstance where we can perform a lot of the services that our builder clients would previously hire someone to do on their behalf. So that's been good for us.
So you're actually taking some of your team and applying them into some of the things but further into the process, I guess, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's like estimating, but also project management.
Okay,
to that extent. And as far as some of the things that we've always done, I grew up fortunately having been told that it doesn't matter whether you've got a legal document in front of you. If you shake your hand, shake someone's hand, tell them that you're going to do something, then you do it, mm-hmm. and it's just that simple. And it's those old school principles that will never. That will never change.
Well, and you've developed relationships over the years with some of the best architects and builders and contractors in town, but also, I guess, throughout the state. Is that type of business still happen? That handshake is that what you're seeing in your business? Is that still a common standard?
I can't always say that it's reciprocated.
Right.
You know, it's not everyone grows up with that type of a mindset.
Sure.
I mean, just take a look at Wall Street.
Yeah.
But
well, that's heartening to hear that you're still doing that. I'm amazed too by the level of customization that you still can do. I guess one of the things that you've prided yourself on over the years is your mill work, and I know that's still a critical part of your business. Is that side of the business coming back and seeing some continued interesting work that you're doing for different projects?
Yeah, it's certainly changed over time, but because of the recession, we've added a number of services and to our menu, and which includes expanding our architectural millwork manufacturing into custom built-ins and cabinetry.
Mm, okay.
So if an architect can design it, we can take their designs, do our own shop drawings, and put it into our mill, and we can build pretty much whatever you can conceive, from custom cabinetry to custom windows and doors, moldings that are custom design and, spec'd out of, an exotic wood, for instance. So those are some of the fun things that we do.
Okay. Now, it seems like everyone who's ever redone their kitchen or whatever says the cabinets are the big issue. Why is custom cabinetry so difficult? It's probably not difficult for your team, but it seems like that's always the thing that takes the longest or, doesn't come out quite right.
Well, I think a lot of it is because, especially if you're building a high-end home, you spend, the majority of your time in the kitchen.
Right.
Every house these days, or it's been, for quite a while, the kitchen and the great room is all integrated into one big living area. And so I think that has something to do with it. It also is it's a trend.
Well, Luther touched on these cultural cornerstones, Archie. What about for AC White? Are there things that you look back on that you really say these are our guiding principles?
I think so. Like Luther said, it's a family business and it's handed down. My father and his brother, who were close in age, ran the business. From about after World War II to the mid 90s, and my two cousins and my son and myself have taken it over. And we follow through, if somebody makes a promise and, we have to bend the rules a little to keep that promise, we try to do that. A lot of that comes from being a family business, or at least locally owned and operated. Mm-hmm. Many of our competitors, the headquarters is in Chicago or Minneapolis or Phoenix or somewhere. So the local people might have to, have a decision made from thousands of miles away, and we can make it right here locally, to satisfy the customer. That's the main thing.
Luther, do you benefit from that local experience as well? I guess you're both in fairly hyper local businesses to a certain extent, but having been in the business for so long, does that really accrue to your benefit from a marketing standpoint?
I think so. We used to sell retail coal, and we also were in the heating and air conditioning installation sales and service business at one time. So we were, more of a household name, just in the general public in the Atlanta area. But as time went by, we were, we focused more heavily on dealing with a professional clientele, which is the contractor, the architect, and the developers. In our wholesale division, where we deliver goods predominantly in the Southeast, but we also have clients as far away as Japan and several on the West Coast that have come to rely upon us.
Okay.
And but it's still dealing with either a business owner or the contractor.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about the vision for the next 5-10 years and your kind of strategic planning process. Archie, I'd love your thoughts on that. Where do you see AC White going in the next decade?
Well, Luther says that he can see out into the future to 2019. I think he said we don't go quite that far. Our business is fairly seasonal. The summer when kids are out of school is our busy season, and each year, you know, we face a challenge of hiring enough people and getting them trained and qualified to do a seasonal job, you know, because they may not be able to stay once the season slows down, although in the last few years that's been less of a problem. But basically it's, you know, hiring quality people, doing background checks, you know, for that's one of the greatest innovations in our industry is that we require a background check for anyone that's in contact with a customer because we go right into their homes, right. And you certainly don't want somebody that can't pass a background check in a customer's home. So that's made a big difference. We're also challenged with having enough over-the-road truck drivers. An over-the-road truck driver in our business is gone for long periods of time, and even though they can make pretty good money at it, a lot of people just aren't, you know, they can't do that. They can't stay away from home for 4, 5, or 6 weeks at a time. So getting the right people is a challenge, and planning, you know, for the workflow that it's not unusual for somebody to call you on Thursday and say, hey, I need to move Monday. Well, you know, that's short-term planning, but you got to be flexible. You know, it's something we've always dealt with. So that's, I guess, the having quality employees is our biggest challenge. You know, it's kind of a slow learning curve and a training process.
Right. So on that seasonality that you talk about, what's the kind of top to bottom type of number of employees that you might swell to during that time?
We'll add probably 25 to 40 temporary people in the summer. A lot of times that's college kids or even some, you know, older high school kids that are free for the summer.
Okay.
And we use, you know, we try to keep them all busy so that they can make, you know, 30 or 40 hours a week. But the off season it drops down because it's, you know, there's just not enough work to go around. So we'll be down to 120 or so in the off season and 140, 45 in the busy season.
Have any of the issues from Washington and healthcare issues had an effect on that on how you manage that seasonal workforce?
Not really. It we have a good insurance program. We pay a big portion of our employees' coverage. You know, it's still kind of up in the air. We're not completely sure how it's going to resolve itself, but so far it hasn't affected us greatly. Mm-hmm. Our prices have gone up. Our cost of insurance has gone up, but it hasn't been anything traumatic.
Gotcha. Luther, what about your vision for the next 10 years? Where do you see your company going?
Well, we're absolutely just focused on the core of our business, and there's plenty of expansion there for us to go into. We've been focusing on taking our distribution business from kind of expanding it from the current location on Marietta Street. Our principal location is on Marietta Street, and expanding it from there, as opposed to what we might have done in the past, which was, you know, acquire another distribution facility that was, you know, farther away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real organic process, but the opportunities for expansion are very, very strong. The challenge is, I mean, from a business standpoint, there's going to be plenty of market for us to capture. And we're just scratching the surface currently on what we can get as far as market share goes, both in the contractor and in the distribution business. But the biggest challenge for us is finding talented people. And that goes from sales people to sales coordinators, estimators, and the like. Because we're not only very selective about that, but the nature of what we do requires that we have very experienced people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're difficult to find. We're known for being more of our salespeople are more consultants than they are, you know, aggressive driven salespeople. They have to know how the products are used. They have to be able to, connect with the builders to give them, you know, good advice and consultation on what might be the best application for what they're
right
for what they're constructing.
Where do you find those folks?
Well, it
sounds like a pretty specific skill set that they might have, and maybe not something that you can learn in college, for instance.
No, not really. We do it a couple of ways. If there's someone who is, we've been talking to a couple of people who are getting back into the business. As a matter of fact, my current sales manager, a fantastic guy, Mike Lopez, he got out of the business himself when things turned south, and he was a big fisherman and went into the boat selling business, fishing boat business. And fortunately, he was wanting to get back in, and we caught him at a good time. And he's very well connected and in the process of recruiting people back into the business. But they'll either come from other companies. And in addition to that, we're bringing in people and just training them, younger folks, training them on our system, product knowledge, the whole nine yards, kind of like Archie was talking about. And so, and that's a long process for us. It probably takes somebody at least 2 years to get to the point where they can get to the coordinator level.
Right.
And then beyond that, going into outside sales.
Archie, do you have formal training programs that you're bringing your employees through, or is it more on-the-job type of activities?
Well, it's a little bit of both, but we do have a formal training program. Mm-hmm. Our safety and claims manager conducts packing classes. You know, each class that a packer progresses through, they get a patch, you know, showing that they're fully qualified. Mm-hmm. We have, a reputation in the industry as a fairly stable company. So we'll get calls from competitors' people that may be looking to make a switch. And a lot of times they're pre-trained. We still put them through our training programs that will make sure they do things our way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, it's a constant battle. You gain a few people and you lose a few, and you have to keep the process going.
That tends to be, it seems like, the biggest challenge for a lot of the people that we talk to is, finding great people and then keeping them. What are some of the employee either benefits or ways that you guys celebrate your success at your company when something goes really well? Are there things that you do that have been particularly effective in boosting morale?
Well, we announce it company-wide, either emails or, bulletin board messages that a customer called in and was very happy with the crew, and the crew consisted of, and we list the guys' names.
Mm-hmm.
We do performance bonuses. We have people that can earn a little extra money if they've had a good week or two, based on customer comments. I guess that's about it. I'd have to give it some more thought.
Right. Okay.
But we recognize, good customer service.
Fantastic. Okay. Luther, thoughts on that?
No, recognition is extremely important. There are psychological studies that'll tell you that even salespeople, beyond the commission, what they really appreciate as much as anything else is the recognition that they get. But I guess we're taking a little bit different tact in terms of the entire workforce. It is very important for them just to be acknowledged on a routine basis, not necessarily have the, an established structured process. So for our sales division, the most important thing that we do is treat our salespeople like they're our customers, because they're the lifeblood of the company. And, one of the things that my father used to say repeatedly is nothing happens till somebody makes a sale. So,
right.
Those are the folks we try to treat well. And if they're well supported, then they're going to have, it'll be less likely that they're going to be courted away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's extremely important right now, because as I said, there's a shortage of really good salespeople. And as far as all of the other employees go, it really boils down to just treating them well. Making sure that they know exactly what is expected of them, and then recognizing that. And every year we have an annual Christmas party, and that's when we recognize length of service. And fortunately, with things getting better, we're actually structuring more reward through recognition. Mm-hmm. And on a more formal basis.
That's great. Well, both of you have, your companies have been such mainstays in Atlanta. Love your view on the future of Atlanta and what you see for our great city.
Well, Atlanta's a great moving city. It's always got something going on, whether it's commercial moving, which is office moving,
mm-hmm.
International. It's a lot of corporations have offices here that are in other countries. There's a lot of moving back and forth. That's a real specialized niche. Not everybody can do that.
Is that something that you can do?
Yes, we do a good bit of that.
Okay, great.
It's it's like anything else. You got to be a little bit better than your competitors, and you've got to price it properly so that you don't shoot yourself in the foot. But it's unregulated. Some of the work we do, the government gets involved considerably, but in international moving, it's pretty much a free market. But Atlanta's, you know, got lots of nice homes that are buying, people are buying and selling homes again now, so they need a mover, and it's, you know, the general economy, is, as far as the part that we participate in, is doing much better.
Mm-hmm. Great. Luther, Atlanta?
Well, no, Atlanta's always been a great market. If you know, if we hadn't gotten hammered, you know, in the, with the housing bubble, you know, things wouldn't have been so devastating for our industry. Mm-hmm. But you know, Atlanta's always been a strong market, and so if you can survive those type of rough patches, then Atlanta's always going to be, a good market.
Right.
It's evidenced by Mercedes-Benz moving its location here. You know, even though it's still, you know, we constantly pitch a fit about property taxes in the city, it's relatively speaking, with other areas, where, you know, it's still a cost-effective place to work. There's a good across-the-board talent pool of people.
Right.
But I think Atlanta's always going to be a good market.
That's certainly been our experience, and there's just a lot of great news coming out, whether it be all the new housing that's going in downtown and midtown, and also the continued expansion out outside the perimeter. Every week I ask about best business advice that you've ever received, and both of you've shared a lot of incredible business wisdom so far, but I'd love for you to answer that question, the best business advice you've ever received.
I would say that keeping debt manageable, maybe not low, because you got to have some in any type of business, but to keep it manageable, that especially in a seasonal business, if you got 12 months of payments on something, you know, it's kind of hard to do that if you're only making money for 5 or 6 of those months. But one of the things that we've tried to do is keep our debt within reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's been over the years, just been a standard operating procedure for you.
It has. You know, we've varied from that, you know, a time or two to buy a building or to buy out a competitor or something, but it's worked out so far.
And so it sounds like you've used debt as part of your acquisition strategy. What's typically the payback period that you like to think about when you're penciling in opportunities?
Well, the equipment that we use, which is mostly tractor and trailer trucks, the cost on those is phenomenal. To get a fully equipped moving tractor and trailer, mm-hmm. it's over $200,000 to get a quality new unit. Now, we don't always buy new, but some states, well, California so far, but there'll be more to follow. You can't send an old truck into the state. They won't allow it in based on their air, quality of air requirements. But to buy the equipment that we use, you know, it's very costly. So we have to, you know, make wise decisions, and we don't, you know, we can't replace it every 4 or 5 years like, maybe a larger business could.
Right.
So we have to be careful on equipment selection. The interest rates, you know, help that, because the interest rates are manageable. So we're not opposed to taking a chance on something if we can do our due diligence and think it's a good plan. We've had a few acquisitions in the last 3 or 4 years that have worked out quite well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Fantastic. You know, it's interesting that you've had several successful acquisitions over the last few years. You know, generally that's, you're to be commended for that, because there hasn't been that much acquisition activity, really over the last 5 years. So, what a great story that you've been able to grow organically, but also grow through acquisition. Mm-hmm. Luther, best business advice.
Well, I concur with what Archie said about the proper manner in which to manage leverage. Certainly, receivables are a big part of that. But, you know, we're not a bank per se, but we're still in the lending business. We extend credit, you know, to practically everyone that we work with. And so that's and I've seen other businesses, not quite as old as ours, but old family businesses go by the wayside because they get a little bit too lenient, mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. respect. So, you know, you don't want to be too heavy-handed with it, but you have to manage it properly. Otherwise, you won't survive. And that certainly applies to leverage as well. But as far as generic advice, one thing is, and I'm not saying anything Archie doesn't already know, and I'm sure yourself, but, you know, for a family business as old as we are, The best thing I can say is that you've got to stay on top of change. That's the only constant in business, mm-hmm. you know, and so you've got to keep your wits about you and manage that process, make decisions accordingly. And you have to understand that past performance, which we have fortunately a lot of good history with our performance, but it's no guarantee at all of future success. So, you have to sing for your supper every day. You have to earn the customer every single day.
Right. It seems like the velocity of business obviously has changed a lot, but this is a great topic, frankly. This whole sense of maybe not so much reinventing yourself, but at least staying. How do you stay competitive? How do you stay, on top of your business? I like to think about it in the context of maintaining your edge. How do you, Archie, maintain the edge, either personally or for your company?
Well, we've got a lot of good people that work without much supervision, so that makes it easy.
Right.
A lot of those are long-term people that have the responsibility or given the responsibility to make decisions at their level, that apply to the customers. Our business has always been and probably always will be a blue-collar heavy industry. We've got advances in communications, phones for the people and handheld scanners, to inventory the product. But still, some blue-collar person has to take that heavy dresser out of the house and take it down to the truck. So
right.
that I don't see that changing anytime soon. But it's a challenge, every day's.
It's all about people and the quality of people.
I think so. Every phone call is a new chance. So right. It's great.
Great. That's fantastic. I want to shift a little bit to what I call the speed round. I just like to ask you a couple of questions that are a little bit off the beaten path. Want to know from both of you what you wanted to be when you were growing up. Maybe you always wanted to be in the family business, but was that the case for you, Archie?
No, I wanted to be a baseball player growing up.
Okay.
I love the sport. In fact, I have three sons that I coached. When my career was over, I coached my sons, and then when their career was over, I got into officiating high school baseball. So I'm still connected to the game that I started loving about 60 years ago.
Fantastic. So you officiate high school games in the spring?
I sure do. In fact, I tell people that I have a hobby job that I get paid to let people yell at me, and so far nobody's guessed, nobody's guessed my profession.
So you go from a stressful day job to a stressful afternoon or evening job. That's that's doubling up, it seems like.
Well, I used to get yelled at work sometimes, so to get yelled at the ballpark is not quite as bad. You can't yell back. You have to ignore it, but it's a hobby. You spend money to go fishing and play golf, and you make a little money to referee a sport. So it's relaxing, really.
That's great. Fantastic. Luther, what about you? What did you want to be when you were growing up?
Well, how much time do you have? There's a number of things that I would have liked to have done, sort of ancillary hobbies, at the present time. But I guess if I could have just designed a career path, it would have been to bang on the door at the Ferrari headquarters in Modena, Italy, and try to get on as a test driver.
Okay,
leading to a career in racing Indy style cars or Formula One. But
do you do a little bit of that today, either racing or driving fast?
Well, yeah, in a different sense, all perfectly legal, of course. but being just like I said before, being a self-made man in whatever career path that I took, but it was always had a great reverence for the business people, mm-hmm. my grandfather and my father. So it was kind of a natural thing to gravitate into the executive world. And it didn't necessarily matter to me the industry as much as it did the opportunity to be at the helm of whatever company and whatever industry, that I found some favor with.
Yeah. It's, you bring up an interesting point in that, so much, I guess, as parents is passed down not only in the perhaps in the office environment. You probably both at an early age got to see your fathers in the office, so to speak. But there's also that element of things that get passed down at the kitchen table or just in watching or observing. And, you know, any specific memories about that growing up and working closely with your fathers as you did?
When I was a child, I can recall on the weekends or maybe at nights that my dad would get, we were a much smaller company then, but my dad would get calls at night, sometimes late, from unhappy customers that, you know, maybe things weren't working out, and they'd call and yell at him. And, you know, it stuck with me all these years because I remember how he handled it. You know, he was a professional and didn't yell back. I might have been tempted to yell back. But he, you know, took the business home with him, which small businesses do. You know, if you, right. somebody needs you, they call you. Mm-hmm. And I remember that, you know, going way back.
Luther, memories of your father and things you learned at home or at the kitchen table?
Yeah, from a business standpoint, it probably stemmed more from making visits to the company with my grandfather, mm-hmm. and then of course going down to the office with my dad, oftentimes on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. So you know, the business was always it was always talked about at the dinner table, and you know, and my grandfather and my father both were always you know, keen to pass along pearls of wisdom and, you know, good character lessons, mm-hmm. you know, how to conduct yourself. And but I guess predominantly it was from the visits to the company, and I used to enjoy that very much.
I would think that a mill working operation as a young boy would be a pretty fascinating place to go.
The hard thing for the for all the people that ran the business at the time was keeping me off of the machinery and not getting myself in trouble. So
there you go. What about favorite charitable causes or organizations that you're either personally involved with or that your company's involved with?
Well, we've done some work down through the years with Habitat for Humanity. You know, they have such a good program, mm-hmm. and we would throw in a free move every now and then, I think for a while, one per month or, you know, on a fairly regular basis. And that worked out good. You know, it's a charity that benefits people that need a little help, and it doesn't really cost us much, just a little, you know, labor, hourly labor. They're usually small jobs. So mm-hmm. we've done that for quite a few years and had good success with it.
Fantastic. Luther, are there organizations that you're particularly involved in?
Well, one that I find a great deal of favor with, that's Buckhead Christian Ministries. And the reason that I like them is because they're not so welfare-oriented. What they specialize in is giving struggling families a hand up. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're having difficulty, you know, managing their bills, or, you know, the head of the family lost his job or things of that nature, then they kind of step in and help them get back on their feet.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I want to thank you both for being with us in the studio. The time's gone too fast. Archie, what's the best way for our listeners to learn more about A.C. White or to contact you?
Well, they can go to our website, www.acwhite.com, or they can call us. You know, our phone number is on the internet, and we've got people standing by waiting on their call even as we speak.
Fantastic. Best movers in Atlanta.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And beyond. Mm-hmm. Luther, what about you? How do they get in contact with you?
Well, as Archie said, we have a good website, www.randallbrothers.com, and they can call me.
Fantastic. Well, that's great. Again, thank you both for being with us. This has been fantastic. Join us again next week for another Founders Club broadcast sponsored by Atlantic Capital Bank and powered by Business Radio X.